From LPM,
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
This is the Artistic Heart Podcast, a podcast with an artistic heart and soul, with Anna Mead and Jack Wallen.
Hi, welcome back to the Artistic Heart Podcast, the podcast with heart and soul. I'm here as Anna Mead with
Jack Wallen.
Can we redo that? I'm like, wait, sure, what can. Is your tagline?
Yeah, let me just...
Because I didn't do the tagline last time, right. I think.
I'll know to start it here.
Okay.
Whenever you're ready.
But what is the tagline?
The podcast with heart and soul. You got it right.
Oh, okay. Great. My memory's better than I thought. Hello, and welcome back to the Artistic Heart Podcast, the podcast with heart and soul. I am Anna Mead.
And I am Jack Wallen.
And we are here today to talk about a topic that I have thought about for a very long time, Jack, and that is, how do you kill your reverence for the white male European canon? and I'm hoping that we'll be able to cover a pretty wide variety of things because, as we know, that canon is intact for theater, music, books. Movies, pretty much everything.
It is. It really is. And I have actually, strangely enough, being a white male myself, I have a lot to say on this because I have tried very hard over the years to go against this.
Mm-hmm. And you have to be very conscious about it. That's the you thing do. Is that because the unfortunate fact that we live in a world of white supremacy, you have to think consciously about reading or consuming anything that is not specifically white, usually male-focused, heterosexual, so on.
Right.
So you have to be very conscious of it, unless you're, you know, not white or...
unless you're a white supremacist.
And and those people, this podcast is not for you.
No, it's not. So turn it off, go away.
You're a white supremacist. Pretty sure you're not listening. But I was an art historian. That was what I studied in school. And it wasn't until quite a bit later that I realized that just about every artist I learned about was a white man.
Right.
And you don't think about it at the time because, you know, they're flashing up the slides. But wow. I mean, we could go all day, right? We go Rembrandt and Monet and Van Gogh and blah, 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 you know, and I think that is because that's how my professor was trained, who actually was quite feminist, but she was older, and it just gets passed down generation after generation unless somebody says, hey, wait, this isn't right. I mean, I'm pretty sure the only artist we learned about that was not white was like Grandma Moses, you know,
right.
Basquiat, like, you know, big, big freaking deal that you can mention like two black artists and this were in my survey classes, in my art history classes, you know, so like from ancient times to the Renaissance and from the Renaissance till now, and like that's all they could come up with, you know. So that's our topic for today, but I'd love to hear a little bit from you, Jack. What has been some of the challenges in you sort of expanding what you consume?
Well, I tend, as far as art that I consume, I try to approach it in such a way that I'm being as well-rounded as I can. But at the same time, here's one of the problems that people face, I think, in general, is that sometimes in certain genres of, especially of fiction, mm-hmm. which is what I read the most, mm-hmm. it's not always easy to find titles written by people other than white men. And I go out of my way to find them. And, you know, especially when you get dig deep into the world of genre fiction. Mm-hmm. Now, there are people out there, and there are some absolutely great writers out there that aren't white men. Mm-hmm. It's even in the most genre of genres you can find.
Yes.
And the problem is that you have to find them. You have to actually take the extra steps to find them. You can't just have your Kindle out and search for, I don't know, steampunk.
It's conscious consumption, right?
It requires
you to take an extra step.
Yes, and that extra step.
I need to Google amazing Black writers in this genre, right? I need to Google amazing Native American writers. And there aren't enough voices out there because there have been so many hindrances and restrictions placed. But, you know, when you do find them, like always, we want to support our authors.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I have, for a number of years, I did, you know, there's in February, I don't think it's official anymore, but in February, it was Women in Horror Month. And I hosted a Women in Horror Month on my own website. And I would highlight a new female horror author every day. Mm. And, you know, it's things like that that we need to do in order to make the public aware. Here's the problem with this. And I only say this because I have experienced this kind of backlash before. Especially when one particular year when I was hosting the Women in Writers, Women in Horror Writer Month, I had readers actually come to me saying, you know, it's not just women who should be spotlighted here. You should be spotlighting all horror writers.
Men?
Well, yeah, for the most part.
Were they literally not all menning you about your highlighting female authors?
They were. It's just, it's frustrating because you want to be able to support them. And I do, I go out of my way to support mm-hmm. minorities and women writers and any person that I feel that is a viable, mm-hmm. you know, artist, because the problem is when you open up the floodgates to say, I'm going to support women in horror in February, you still have to vet them just like I would vet anybody. And somebody would send me their stuff and I would say, okay, let me look at it real fast. And then I would say, I don't know. And that has nothing to do with them being female. That has to do with them, whether or not they are a skilled writer.
Sure.
But
let's go back to a minute to those fans of your podcast who were complaining, because I do think this is really an important point to hit on, which is you have fans who were upset, right? Now, the question is this a teachable moment? Are these people who are interested in anything other than white men?
No, here's what it was in that instance. It wasn't fans of my work, because fans of my work know where they're coming from. because I go out of my way in my work mm-hmm. to include minorities and women. Mm-hmm. Like my most popular series that I wrote, the iZombie series, after the first book was a male lead, male mm-hmm. protagonist. After that, it was a female protagonist the whole way. Mm-hmm. And she was smart and strong and intelligent and she was all the things. Mm-hmm. And I consciously did that because I had, at the time, you know, I started writing this back in 2010. And at the time, when I was consuming as much of that genre fiction as I could, I realized that women only played a very narrow role in that genre. They were either
the screamers.
They were the screamers, the eye candy. They were the relationship fodder. And I said, enough.
She boobed up the stairs boobily.
Exactly. And I said, I'm going to flip this on its head. I'm going to make the main character a female. She's a hacker. She's a fighter. She's everything that you need to survive in the zombie apocalypse. And at first people were like, whoa, what's this all about? And eventually they said, okay, I get it. I get it. And but the people that were balking at me supporting female horror authors were actually other authors. They were male authors that wanted their time in the spotlight. And I'm like, you always have the time in the spotlight.
Serious? Man, yeah, that's worse. I mean, I can kind of appreciate like how fandom is usually this sort of drugs anyway. But like when it's other authors, that's really insufferable when you think about it, because they should understand better than anybody that there are people who get the spotlight and people that don't. But I think this goes back to something that I read. This is not my original idea, but this idea of like when you've had a privilege and it's taken away, it feels like an injustice.
Yeah.
So when you have someone white and educated and who's had all the privileges and all the chances and all the opportunities in the world, right? And then they don't get something, or they feel like somebody else is getting something that they ought to have. It feels like they're being punished. Well, you're not being punished.
No.
Someone else is being highlighted. Like, right.
And that, the biggest problem in the world of publishing now is that you have such a super saturation of books and authors that everybody feels like, not everybody, a lot of writers feel like they have to do anything and everything they can to take the spotlight away from other writers so they can be seen and heard.
Which is the exact opposite of what they need to do, as you know.
Exactly.
It's like you have to share the work of others and be generous.
Right.
And then people are more inclined to be generous to you.
Right. And
if all you're like is buy my book, you should listen to me. Like, people are going to be like, yeah, no.
Right. And what that has eventually evolved into within this world is a lot of authors being isolated. And there's no more a sense of community that there was five or seven years ago. It was a wonderful place to hang out and be a part of because you felt like you belonged to something. Mm-hmm. And I would go to conventions and there would be all colors of the rainbow. Every possible spectrum of person that you could think of was there. There were literally just a rainbow was represented. Of every possible thing you can think of, and everybody got along and they were happy and people were sharing and supporting one another, and then all of a sudden the market kind of dried up,
right?
And because of that, people started withdrawing from that support, and it did all of a sudden become buy my book, and it didn't matter where you came from,
right?
You know. And when you reached out to try to help someone, here's one of my biggest beefs about this, my current biggest beef, because it changes every day. But for example, there's a trend on Twitter where it's shameless self-promotion, and there's another thing called writer's
hashtag?
Yeah, hashtag.
Okay.
And there's another hashtag called writer's lift, and here's the way it works. A writer with a big following will post, hey, let's have a writer's lift. And everybody will, all the other writers will go, oh, there it is. There's my chance. They'll just dump their links to their books in it. Now, a couple months ago, I tried an experiment and I said, let's try a writer's lift of a different kind. Let's actually lift each other up. Let's have a writer's lift where first you offer up a piece of advice for other writers, and then you post your link to your book. Maybe 1 in 10 people actually followed the rules and posted a piece of advice. The rest of them just posted links to their books.
That's so obnoxious.
It is obnoxious.
Do people not realize that, like, that is such an etiquette breach?
Yeah.
I guess they don't, or they don't care.
But here's the kicker. Guess who the majority of people were?
Mm-hmm.
They were white men.
Mm, yeah, you're kidding.
No, I'm not.
Who are not known for their reading and listening comprehension in general.
Right.
so yeah, I mean, books, we have a challenge. You have to go out and look. But let's say you love science fiction. Well, Octavia Butler, right?
Yeah, right.
N.K. Jemisin. There's some amazing Black authors out there, Brown authors out there, You don't have to be exclusive to one particular area. There's just, but you have to look, right? You have to look, and you have to be willing to open yourself a tiny crack to a point of view that's going to be different than yours, and not just sort of instantly react when it's not what you imagine it to be, right?
And at the same time, as an artist, you have to be willing to include others in your work. One of the problems that I find is that and I understand there are a number of things at play here, and we can touch on those things. But as a writer, you're trying to create a world that is believable. And a believable world is not just rich, white, Christian men.
You're kidding. you know what that makes me think of is that when I saw Rogue One, is that a movie you saw, Rogue One?
I've seen it.
I said to my husband, I was like, why are there no women in this galaxy? And if you go back and watch it, you'll see there's her mother who was murdered. You know, there's a few other female characters. But if you look at the crowds, it's nothing but men. Now people are like, oh, well, you know, it's the armed forces, it's the resistance. Well, guess what? This is a resistance in a fantasy world. So yeah, there's going to be women. But that whole movie suffers from a huge lack of women and a huge lack of women talking. If you did a supercut of all the lines spoken by women, other than Jen, right? Like it would be like 10 seconds.
Exactly.
It's absurd. Anyway, go ahead and finish your point.
So that was one of the driving forces behind me switching the gender of the main character in that series, because females needed representation in that genre. And as I continued on with that series, I started adding other people. I started adding Black people and gay people, and I tried to be as inclusive as possible. And it started having an effect. And other authors started saying, you know what, you're onto something. And it wasn't about, hey, maybe this will help sell my books, because that's never what it was. It was about, hey, this makes for a more believable universe.
And
go ahead.
No, no, I'm sorry.
I
keep interrupting.
As I was,
which is rude when white men do it. It's rude when white women do it too.
One of the things that I've always tried to accomplish as a series continues on is to broaden it, not just broaden the arc of the main character, but broaden the colors of the book, of the series. Like with my Fear series, and it started out. The two main characters were married at one point. There's a male doctor and a male surgeon and a female surgeon. They were married at one point, but she, the wife, realized she was gay, and she fell in love with her husband's sister. Mm-hmm. Then they divorced, but they stayed friends. So I started out that series at least representing straight white men and gay women, and married couples that have had to deal with that.
Right.
And as the series went along, and that first series, I also added two Black characters and an Hispanic character. And then as the series went on, I added a East Indian character and characters of other religions and other gender presentations and things like that. And here's the tricky part. At first, as an artist, as a writer, you have to remind yourself to do that. Especially now, I'm talking from the straight male perspective.
Right.
You have to remind yourself to do that.
If you're any color other than white, you don't have to be reminded.
Yeah. But eventually, the nice thing is eventually, that just becomes a part of your, and I don't say this flippantly, but it becomes a part of your toolkit.
Right.
It becomes a part of your palette. And you just all of a sudden start coloring the worlds that you write with a broader spectrum, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I mean, and I think had anyone along the way in the making of Rogue One looked at their at their dailies and been like, oh, hey.
This show is really white.
But when you only have white men in charge, right?
Yeah.
White men making all the creative decisions, they're not going to notice because that's just normal.
But here's the thing. That's not an excuse now.
No, it's not. In fact, it's embarrassing.
Yeah. At this point in time, if you are a white male executive producing films and you're still producing films that center around the white male story, then you've got a problem. Mm-hmm. And the people under you or the people, your stockbrokers and shareholders, they're not pointing their finger at you and saying, you need to watch, check yourself.
Better, man.
if you're not doing that, then you're setting yourself up for failure now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially, I mean, after the issues that Hollywood has dealt with, you know, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and slowly, too slowly, women, people of other colors, people of their gender identities, people of multiple sexualities are making it into the writer rooms and as producers and as directors. And, you know, those people need to be celebrated and lifted up. Yeah. And there need to be many, many, many more opportunities because I'm done watching movies directed by mediocre white men. I'm just,
right.
I'm you know, done with it. It's just not very good. Like you've had your chance. Let's give somebody else the megaphone.
It's just like in the horror genre. Out of nowhere, Jordan Peele came about.
Right. Who's amazing.
And he turned the genre on its head. And people are like, oh my gosh, this guy knows what he's doing.
Get Out was
it was fantastic.
Amazing.
On so many levels. And then Us, and he's remaking Candyman. And you have to, when you watch his films, they're so layered.
Mm-hmm.
And they're layered in such a way that they don't beat anyone over the head with a message. The message is there, and it's very clear, and you can't miss it.
Right.
But it's not preachy.
Right.
And that's a big problem with white male audiences. Whether you're watching a film or reading a book or listening to music, the second they feel like they're being preached to, they will tune you out.
Which is ironic since white men are most of the preachers.
They're the biggest preachers of all. they have the biggest soapboxes and the loudest megaphones.
There's a blog or I don't remember if it was an article or blog of like where a woman was writing like things that men have explained to me.
Yeah.
She's like an expert in her field. And like the number of things that are just explained to her over and over and over again. She's like, yeah, I know. And this happens across the board, no matter how famous you are.
Right.
No matter how.
I follow a literal rocket scientist on Twitter. She's absolutely brilliant. And I saw a thread of hers. I saw this firsthand. I saw a thread of hers where somebody clearly didn't know who she was, tried to explain to her the physics of shooting a rocket ship in space. And she finally said, do you realize that I am a rocket scientist? I know what I'm saying. And he went silent.
You just want to get it tattooed on you somewhere. You're like, so you don't have to keep saying it. Or like,
but here's the thing that's really frustrating. Men don't have to do that. Men don't have to say, I'm a rocket scientist. I know what I'm talking about.
No, never. If they are not as talented or as experienced or as educated, no, they never have to explain.
They don't. And it's despicable. You know, there have been times like recently I posted something on Twitter and I felt like I had to preface this by saying I have been a professional writer for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know a lot of men out there that would not have bothered to preface that.
Yeah.
Because they feel like, because I'm a white man, you should just trust me.
You should just listen.
Yeah.
Listen and learn.
And every woman I know feels like they have to preface everything they say with, mm-hmm. I know what I'm talking about.
Oh, here's my resume. This is why I'm accomplished.
Right.
And we're taught not to brag, right? We're to not speak highly of ourselves. But man, if you don't, nobody will. And
right, exactly. You know, here's one of the things that I try to do in life is I try, when I see those kinds of injustices on social media, I I quickly jump to the defense of women and minorities and say, she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, that needs to happen, because unfortunately the white male voice does reach the furthest and the loudest.
It does.
I was thinking, you know, and this is of course from my ignorance, a lot of the people listening to this podcast are don't have any reverence for the white male canon. So my topic actually was not maybe framed the greatest, but for those people who do, right? And I think I won't say natural, but it is normal, because the curriculum that we have in schools is almost exclusively white men. If I look at my bookshelf, there's a disproportionate number of white writers. Yeah. And I have a decent number of female writers, but I've had to work very hard in the last 6, 7, 10 years to diversify my bookshelf.
Yeah.
And same for like plays, right? Okay. Right. Well, it's good that we know Oscar Wilde is queer, right?
Yeah.
But right. How many openly queer playwrights, right, do you have on your shelf? Right. How many transgender playwrights do you have on your shelf?
Besides Charles Bush.
Right. I mean, like, I love the work of August Wilson. You know, yeah. Like, have you seen works by people other than white men and even gay white men? Right. Because right. Gay white men do have a powerful presence in the theater. And that's wonderful. And certainly one of the few places that they've had that opportunity to be who they are.
Right.
But people don't need to be reminded of it unless they are.
That makes me think of something that's really important, I think, that we should address. I have on occasion been dinged as a writer for writing characters that are not me, for writing characters that are not white men. That are writing, I write, you know, I'm a straight white male. Mm-hmm. I write a lot of gay characters. I write a lot of women characters. I write a lot of black characters. And I spend my time to make sure that I'm writing in an honest voice.
Mm-hmm.
I have a play that I have written that I plan on submitting to a particular theater that will be unnamed, but anybody will probably be able to guess which theater that is. But the play is about coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I have never come out. Mm-hmm. I will never come out because
I have. It's not fun.
I'm straight. You know, I guess.
Yeah, for those unaware, I am bisexual. So
okay, so I will come out right now. I am a straight white man.
Yes, I know. It's almost
there's my coming out.
Oh.
But you know, I've had people who beta read that play. Like I had one rather straight person say, "This is not how gay people speak."
Oh, gee.
I'm like, how do gay people speak?
Well, and you
tell
probably
me.
Know way more. People in the community.
For you know, my initial reaction was, do you know how many gay friends I have and how much interaction I have with gay
we
people?
We have to be careful of that because we don't want to be like,
I know,
do you know how
know.
Many black friends I have?
I know, exactly.
But
that's
yeah,
the problem.
That's a normal reaction.
Right. I've played gay people on the stage.
Sure.
I have a gay stepson. It just the list goes on and on. But my overriding reaction was, how do they speak? Why don't you tell me?
Yeah.
Why don't you give me an example of how gay people speak? Because I know I lived with a gay man for years.
Does he think that like we have to lisp or what?
Right, exactly. Like, I lived with a gay man for years, and we would when someone new would come into our apartment, we would always play a game with them. We would say, "Go into our bedrooms, come out, and tell us which is the gay man." And they would always guess me.
That's amazing.
And, you know, it's like,
because
I
you
know,
have all the theater stuff in your room.
Right, exactly. No, he was involved in the theater as well.
Oh, I see.
He you would never know he was gay unless.
He didn't have like posters of like Judy Garland all over.
He didn't have posters of Judy Garland. He didn't wear rainbow shirts all the time. He didn't speak in a lisp.
Oh, wow.
His, you know, he didn't follow all of the
stereotypes.
all the stereotypes. You know, and that's the problem. When you say this person doesn't talk like a gay person, you're saying this person isn't stereotypical.
Well, right. And there's only one way that gay
right.
people talk.
It's like when you read somebody's book and now there are some indicators, yes, of what I'm going to mention. But you know, the one thing I have never been accused of is that my female characters never come off as female. That my female characters always come off as female.
Yes.
But I know some people, I have heard some readers respond to writers to say their female characters never come off as female. And they're written by men.
I think I myself have read my share of
right.
books that did not have plausible females acting in.
Right. Well, things. you made the perfect example of that earlier on when, you know, I ran up the stairs boobily. You know, there are certain things, you know,
there's always a scene in a lot of popular male authors
right.
where they have a female character like admiring her breasts.
Right.
Or like
right.
running her hands down her body.
Right. It's like,
and
why
you're
are you?
Hey, we live in this body. We don't right. need to like remind ourselves that
yeah.
our breasts are there. We're stuck with them.
Right. It's like, why are your men not fond? Well,
right. Like,
well, I was going to say, why are your men not fondling their.
But like not being like, wow, you know, look at my physique. You know,
right. Exactly.
Thighs, right?
Look at my dad bod. Woo. I am working it now.
I mean, it's almost as if their readers aren't interested in reading about men thighs.
Right. I know. Exactly. Exactly. Look at my love handles. Yeah.
Well, and I think what you say, you know, I to come back around to it, like your concerns about writing characters that are not straight white men is valid. And I think that you do your homework, and you got to do your homework, and you got to take the risk that sometimes you're going to be wrong. And ideally, if this were a perfect world, every author, every creator would go out there and ensure, like, run it past them, and preferably pay them, right? A sensitivity
yeah.
reader,
yeah.
Somebody from the culture, somebody yeah. from that group.
Right.
Because, and that, again, that's an ideal, and that money is not always there. But if you do have a friend, hopefully,
right.
who can look something over and give you some feedback, because nobody wants to be caught out being ignorant, especially now. But
right.
it's going to happen. You're going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
So that doesn't mean don't ever write Black people, don't ever write queer people, because that's a greater injustice. They're
exactly.
in this world with us, right?
Exactly.
Don't write,
you know,
Asian people, right?
When I first came out as a writer, I guess that was a coming out. The first two books I ever wrote centered around transgendered people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the time, I had I don't really have much contact with this person anymore for various incendiary reasons, mostly because they moved. I had a very dear friend who was transgendered, and she wanted me to attend a transgendered meeting with her.
Mm.
And I did. I did for support. And it
was this like T-Star or?
This was, I don't remember what the bells.
It doesn't
matter. I don't remember what they were called. I don't think they're around anymore. But this was like 20 years ago. So
mm-hmm.
My eyes were opened so wide
mm-hmm.
at those meetings, because first and foremost, I saw the truth of these people and how beautiful they were
mm-hmm.
and how human they were. But at the same time, I had to hear about their daily struggles.
How horrible. Yeah.
And how heartbreaking it was. And I came out of that going, I've got to do something to honor and celebrate them.
Absolutely.
So I wrote the first book, and it didn't quite come out that way, because the first book was a thriller where transgendered people were being killed in this community.
Right.
And the one of the main characters was a gay male. Now, this was 20 years ago.
Right.
So it was a different time.
When we know better, we do better.
Right. And at the time, you know, the gay character was very gay.
Mm-hmm.
When he was able to be gay,
mm-hmm.
he was very gay. He celebrated his gayness.
Right.
And then when he was not able to be gay, like when he was back at the police force, at the police mm-hmm. headquarters, he was not able to be gay. He always had to tone it down. Mm-hmm. But that was written at that time, and it was very different. Now I could write that same character and him, and the only hints of him being gay might be the fact that he's at home with his boyfriend.
Right. Be like, hey, you know, just like everybody else.
Yeah. And that was an important lesson for me to learn over the years.
Well, and I think it might be worthwhile pointing out that yesterday was International Transgender Day of Visibility.
Right.
And so to celebrate and ensure that transgender people are protected, are given opportunities for their voices to be heard. That's extremely important. So no matter what your gender identity is, no matter what your sexuality is, your religion, your creed, you deserve to have your voice heard.
Right, right.
And if I could say anything to kind of like bring it back around, since of course, as usual, we are running a little long. I would say that if you are a white person listening to this, I would challenge you to go forward and watch a movie by a Black creator, right? Listen mm-hmm. to some music outside of what you normally listen to, though a lot of people who are horribly racist listen to Black music and don't listen to it without no irony, right?
I know. I don't understand. It's like racist watching football.
Right. Like, what? Yeah.
Where's the disconnect?
And then they think they're not racist because they're like, oh, well, Black people are good at sports. And you're like, dude.
I know some Black people that are really bad at sports.
Yeah.
I mean, and I know some white people that are really good at sports. So, you know, every stereotype can be broken.
Exactly. But yeah, go forward and watch a movie, read a book, buy a book, support these authors and these voices, this music, this art, every time you can, because I promise they're doing it on hard setting, right?
Yeah.
And it's hard right now for all creators, absolutely. Yeah. But it is extra hard if you are part of the LGBTQ community. It's extra hard if you are not white. It's extra hard if you are not a man. And so we recognize our privilege where we can. And we help out where we can, and we lift up and amplify where mm-hmm. we can. And I'm hoping that when this pandemic opens up a little, when our quarantine is fully over, I would love to get some voices on this podcast and get some other than, you know, us white people talking to each other.
But the nice thing is, though, is that I think this is as important as what you were intimating about, is that it is truly important for white people to hear other white people making this normal. Mm-hmm. Because when you and I, two white people, say, support Black authors, mm-hmm. support transgendered authors, do this. Asian we do this. Author. We love this. Right. Then all of a sudden, it becomes part of the narrative.
Native American.
And the more we can make it part of the narrative, the better off it's going to be in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's also important for artists to include other colors in their work.
Mm-hmm. Other types of people. And I think if you can be conscious, you know, I read somewhere that, like, if you are writing a play or a movie script, that if you simply say something, there is a crowd, half of which are women.
Yeah.
Of which are not white people. Are young and old people. That prevents you from, like, getting into this situation where you do have, like, 30 men standing there and you're like, how are all these people being produced in this galaxy without women?
Right. And you know, one of the things
people that, with wombs, like,
right. One thing that fascinates me is that artists always claim to be so good at observation.
Mm.
It's like, I dare you to go out in public and use those superhuman powers of observation and find crowds of people that are nothing but white men.
Mm-hmm. And if you are truly surrounded by crowds of white men, maybe it's time to go different places.
Right, right.
Where you're the minority.
Yeah.
I love going to theater where I'm one of the few white people in the audience. I want there to be more white people, but I also love putting myself in a position where everybody doesn't look like me.
Right, right. And, you know, you know, even the way that this country was founded to be the great American melting pot, mm-hmm. you know, and we should be flying all sorts of colors.
We should.
And
I mean,
be proud of it.
I was thinking about this today where a lot of people in the last years have said, this is not our country, right? This is not who we are. But it is who we are. Anybody who reads history knows that the founding fathers were slave owners and bigots. Knows that this nation was founded on blood and pain and horror. And so it is beholden to us to learn these things and not look away. And for us to understand it's always been us, but it doesn't have to be from now on.
Right.
Right? We can move forward.
Yeah.
And I don't believe in... calling people out, right? If you see someone who you know could do better, I read this morning, like call them in, right?
Yeah.
Privately, talk to them and be I know that you are likely not aware of this, right? But, and then share that with them. And they may not be open to it. But you also, if you like humiliate someone in public, right? That almost rarely gets you where you need to go.
Yeah, so, you'll catch more flies with honey than sugar, or honey than...
Wait.
And what's the opposite? Than
honey
vinegar.
Honey than vinegar is I think the...
I think the saying is,
Whereas I'm very vinegar, so...
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, don't call people out. It doesn't look good on you, and it doesn't look good on them. Mm-hmm. You're right. That's a great, very good point. Okay, so we got to wrap this up, and I want to throw it back to you to give us some parting thoughts on this issue. Make them profound.
Yeah, no pressure. I know. I was kidding. Like, wait, are you not going to be profound on cue? Because I mean, I think the reason we have this podcast and the reason that we are talking about difficult, uncomfortable things is because we are trying to push people, including ourselves, out of what they are most comfortable with and take them to a place where they are learning and growing, which is what all of us as artists need to do, no matter who you are or the kind of person you are, right? So you have to grow, you have to learn, because that is what makes your art truly beautiful, is to reflect how beautiful the world is around us.
Very good.
Was that profound?
What? Anyway. In a non-patting myself on the back way, yes, you were very profound.
Thank you for listening to us today. We appreciate you. We love to hear your feedback. Both Jack and I are on Twitter, or you can email us. And this is the Artistic Heart Podcast, signing off.
The Artistic Heart Podcast is produced by Anna Mead and me, Jack Wallen. It's distributed by Louisville Public Media. Our theme song was written and performed by Craig Waits. To suggest a topic or ask questions, feel free to reach us on Twitter at either JL Wallen or RUANA3.
Support for LPM Podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.